Hello, this is WMUK's Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence with more music of the moment in West Michigan. Glad you could come along tonight. A prize-winning Californian string quartet is coming to perform in Kalamazoo this Thursday at the Ladies' Library, a presentation of Fontana's Summer Festival. Winners of the 2011 Fish Off competition, the quartet has toured to many venues around the world since and is looking forward to appearing in London's Wigmore Hall this season. At last word, the program for Thursday is sold out. Tickets may become available at the door on the day of the show. I recently previewed the program of Mendelssohn, Beethoven, and Golioff with one of the quartet's members, Jeremy Barry. You are the violist. Would you tell me?
I am, that is correct.
Would you tell me about your musical background?
So I grew up in Bellingham, Washington. I started studying with Elizabeth Stewenwalker when I was about five. Actually, all four of the members of my quartet all started playing our respective instruments when we were about that age. I grew up in Bellingham, a little bit north of Seattle, for those that don't know where it is. I played a couple years in the Seattle Youth Symphony, and then went and did an undergraduate degree at Juilliard, studying with Heidi Kaslin and Misha Amory. Went to the Colburn School in Los Angeles from there, and that's actually where I came in contact for the first time with the other members of my string quartet, and we started playing together at that point. We had known each other as students there for a couple years before we started playing together, and then formed the quartet in the year 2010 in the fall.
I imagine that forming a quartet is nearly always done these days out of a simple love of the literature and the ability to explore it with other people. There are some fantastic string quartets in the world already, and maybe that's never the goal at first, to conquer the world, but rather out of a love of the music.
I would absolutely agree with that. We have a running saying of sorts that the string quartet repertoire is some of the best music written by some of the best composers. And there really isn't a better way I could feel about that, that the repertoire itself has really inspired the whole profession and propelled it. And there's also so much great music in turn being written today for these wonderful ensembles that have made it their life's devotion and to play all of the old standard rep as well as bringing in a new age of chamber music as well.
So there's no lack of repertoire to perform. But a few years ago, I read Arnold Steinhardt's book about the Guarneri Quartet, and he had to face a big decision at some point in his life. He was sort of on a track to be a concert soloist or a concertmaster, and the demands of performing in a string quartet were such that he had to choose one or the other. Is that something you guys have had to face yet?
Well, he had a unique situation that he was already, I believe it was assistant concertmaster of Cleveland and even trying to get recruited to be concertmaster of Philadelphia at the time by Ormandy, if I'm not mistaken. So that was kind of a high-pressured decision-making time for him. I think for us it was a slightly different story of, I mean, we all know that how difficult it can be to make a career anywhere in music, but especially in chamber music. There's so much time and effort it takes to get a group off the ground, so to speak. And we knew the challenges going into it, but we've all loved playing chamber music for such a long time that I think we've never seen any of the work as a chore. It's just something that we do to be able to do what we love.
Going to competitions in some ways is a little weird, to be, you know, your foursome against another foursome and in front of judges and such. But a lot of great players grow up these days going to solo and ensemble competitions and just enjoying them and getting to know their peers. Did you have that experience?
Yeah, definitely. And also, maybe it's a strange mentality or maybe it's what everybody does. We don't really know. But our approach to competitions partially was to make them feel as little like competitions as possible. So we would prepare like crazy and practice as much as possible, do as many concerts leading into them. But at the same time, we would sort of try to ignore all of the competition elements, like even go out of our way to sometimes not look at who else is in it or even who's judging it until the competition's over, so that we can really feel as if we're performing a normal recital or concert. Because it's a little dangerous to put yourself into that competitive mindset, because it in some ways goes so much against what we're actually trying to do and say as musicians. So basically we would just try to put out as great of a product as we could in every competition that we did, as if it was what hopefully people would want to pay to go hear in a concert, as opposed to what might make two or three judges happy. And we would just hope that that would be appreciated one way or another. And as it goes in any competition, sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't, but that's sort of the luck of the draw.
When did it work out?
We were very fortunate, particularly in the competitions in the United States, with getting juries that I think appreciated what we had to say musically, particularly in the in the Fischoff competition, which was actually the very first one that we did as a string quartet that we won in 2011, I believe, was here. Because we really entered the competition, you know, thinking that we played pretty well, but not really having any idea how we might stack up against the other groups, or even who the other groups were that year that might be entering that competition. So the competition lasts for three rounds, and as we kept advancing through each round, it sort of got more and more realistic that we might actually win it, which was kind of a funny change in mindset, that we entered it just, you know, hoping to play as well as we possibly could and have a good time and on an off chance maybe do really well, and we felt prepared. But then when all of a sudden we woke up and we were playing the final round that morning, it was sort of like, wait a minute, we could actually go out and win this competition today. That's pretty crazy.
When I was speaking last summer to another string quartet who appeared in the Fontana Festival, I think it was the Linden String Quartet.
Oh, yeah. We know them pretty well.
The player I was talking to said they have great fondness for the Debussy String Quartet. It's sort of the piece that gave them some of the greatest highs they've ever had in competition and in concert. I wondered if you had any special repertoire that took you places like that.
Sure, and yeah, especially whenever we've performed a piece a lot, we have all sorts of stories and connections that kind of go along with them. And the Mendelssohn Opus 13 that we're actually performing on this concert, so it's a good tie-in, was actually the first piece that we really played as a string quartet. And it has such a beautiful, passionate love story that's sort of embedded into the music that... And also the opening and the closing of the work have such a wonderful feeling of coming home about the piece, that every time we come back to it, even though we've played it for a number of years now, we have a special fondness for and a warmth to return back to such an amazing work. Especially written by such a young composer at that time. I believe he was 18 years old when he composed it, which is both absolutely amazing and also a little daunting at the same time. But, yeah.
Is there any particular points of cleverness or like genius inventiveness that he slips in there that you appreciate after having worked on it for so long?
I would say, from maybe a slightly broader scope than the question you asked, what really amazes me about the work is really the raw emotion and power behind it. That you can listen to the piece and instead of being drawn into specific specific elements of cleverness, as you imply, you're just overtaken by the power of the work as a whole. And it has the ability to draw you in as a listener and put you into that trance-like state of listening where you're not actually aware of even what's going on around you in the room, but simply just overtaken by the raw emotional elements of the music. that it has an accessibility to it that can reach every single person in the room, regardless of what kinds of feelings or baggage they might take into the concert that night, which is really amazing. And I do think pretty rare in music, even, for it to have that kind of direct power.
The Ladies' Library, where you're performing, it was built in 1858, you know, not 20 years after Mendelssohn had passed away. And it's kind of amazing to think that the music you're playing still has the ability to reach people, even shock people today, as it did 150 years ago.
Definitely. And that's something that we've, in ramblings with each other, actually really put a lot of thought into discussing is, we often play music that was written up to, you know, hundreds of years ago, and it still has the potential, I believe at least, to have just as much emotional impact on people today, even though times are changing and technology is obviously changing constantly and people are living very different lives. We still feel the same kinds of emotions that people felt when the music was written, and therefore the same music can draw out the same emotional impact today, even though it's reaching a much different audience than the composer might have had any idea might be listening to their music someday.
So the program will end with the string quartet, Opus 13 by Mendelssohn. How does it begin?
So the concert will begin with Beethoven's Opus 18, number 1 string quartet, his very first one. It's not exactly a light piece by any standard, like you might expect out of a composer's first work for a genre. It's very different, obviously, from his late string quartets, which he might be particularly famous for, that have the incredible weight and drama and even operatic quality in some of the string quartets. But even still, the second movement of the Beethoven Opus 18, number 1, was based off of the tomb scene in Romeo and Juliet. And just has an amazing depth and power for it, being one of his early attempts at the string quartet literature. And like I was saying, with the Mendelssohn string quartet has a way of just pulling you in, that it's very incredible. However, it's surrounded by movements that by at least Beethoven's standard for later quartets on are a little bit lighter, almost even in the vein of Haydn, but definitely Beethoven is putting his stamp on how he's going to write string quartets down the road in this work.
Right. He was pretty experienced, having published a lot of chamber music before this, I think, the cello, the trios and serenades and such. And in between, we have a modern work by a very in-demand composer. Is Osvaldo Golijov, is he Argentinian or Brazilian?
Argentinian.
Argentinian. Well, tell me more about this piece.
Well, this piece, Tenebrae, that we've been carrying in our rep for about a year now, is really an amazing work. He based it off of a couple of events that had happened in his life and juxtaposed them with each other in this piece. The first was that he had taken his son, his young son, to the New York City Planetarium for the first time. And his son, for the first time for him, was able to see the Earth as a tiny little blue dot from outer space. And the piece really emotes a feeling of timelessness and atmospheric beauty, especially from the very beginning, with the viol and cello having a running ostinato between the two parts, and then the violins come in, actually with almost more of an older medieval chant type feel over the top, but the parts all come together to make this feeling of something with a very universal scope and beauty to it. And then in the middle of the work, the other event from his life was that he had taken a trip to Israel, and right at the beginning of a new wave of violence. And in this part, the harmonies change drastically. It becomes slightly more violent in texture, and certainly a very different intensity level. And then the piece returns back to the opening idea of the celestial quality. But it's just a wonderfully beautiful work. Like I had mentioned with the Mendelssohn, it's extremely accessible. It's often the piece on any program we play where actually many people come back and say impacted them the most. We've loved playing it every single time that we've, you know, been fortunate to be able to present it at a venue, and we're certainly happy to be able to play it again soon.
It sounds like you've designed a program that allows for both time and space travel.
I guess we have. That's right.
Looking at your schedule, I see that after winning the big prize at the Fischoff competition, the Kalidor went to many different places on tour around the world. And I wondered if you'd give me some highlights of that and even what's coming up in the next season.
Let's see. We had our first trip to Korea this past April, which was a great experience, at the Kumo Art Hall in Seoul. They were the ones that brought us over, and then we also had a concert down in the south in Pyongyang. But let's see, next season we're playing in, we have a concert in Wigmore Hall, we'll be in Lincoln Center at the David Rubenstein Atrium, have a residency at the Caramore Center, so we'll sort of be hopping all over the place. At venues that we haven't been able to play in until this season, so it should be very exciting.
Where would do the four of you call home in between?
Well, that is actually a very good question, because we don't technically have a home at the moment. We just moved out of Los Angeles, and we're working our way towards living in Manhattan next year. We'll also be starting a two-year residency at Stony Brook, so we'll be working with the Emerson Quartet, as well as teaching a bit in the undergrad program there. So that's also very exciting for us to move coasts and start something new, and also be able to teach a little bit on top of our the concerts that we have booked.
You're probably going to miss the sun and the food and all the...
I think we will certainly miss the sun, but we'll also hopefully be able to return to L.A., which was the starting point for a quartet, and perform hopefully every year. Maybe if we're lucky, even perform there in the winter, get some nice weather when we're stuck in the cold.
Yeah, yeah. So you got to be the artist in residence ensemble on Performance Today, which we hear every day here on WMUK. Yeah. How was that experience? As Fred Child, he seems like such a jerk.
Oh, I know. It's just awful, right? No, he was absolutely wonderful to work with. It was a really great experience for us. Just everything about playing on that show was absolutely great. Fred in particular made it very easy for us. It was a lot of playing and talking over a couple of days, but it went by very quickly, and it was really just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and probably kind of polished up what you do in front of audiences as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you tend to introduce pieces during your program, or keep it more formal and music alone?
When it seems relevant, we do try to introduce pieces. In addition to hopefully being able to give a little bit of added light on some of the pieces, especially in a situation where there might not be program notes, we also just like to establish some kind of a line of communication and dialogue with the audience and form a connection with them before we play. And also we do feel very strongly that if an audience feels some kind of a personal connection to the rep that's about to be played before the concert starts, I think that's to everybody's benefit in the room. So we really try to speak as much as possible, not for as long as possible, but as frequently as we can in concerts, just to establish that type of connection.
Okay. And finally, we've been talking about some of the more visible parts of being in the string quartet, the touring, concertizing, collaborating with schools and working with Emerson String Quartet and such like that. But kind of the heart, I think, is the stuff we don't see. It's the it's the practice. I wanted you to give a sense of why the Calidor is the Calidor and coming out of that experience.
Always a very good and difficult question to answer. We have found as a string quartet that, well, being in a string quartet, it's all about finding some kind of a balance, and that kind of applies to everything. It applies to how we deal with each other, knowing how to push each other, but also be respectful of each other, knowing how to have fun or even make fun of each other sometimes, but without going so far as to offend anybody, how to rehearse to the point that we can make ourselves absolutely the best group possible, but while keeping enough time to, you know, practice on our own, keep our scales in good shape, because we know that as a quartet, we can only be as good as the four of us are individually to some extent. And that there are, well, and then God forbid every once in a while you need to balance that with having some kind of a personal life outside of the quartet and making sure that even on a tour, every once in a while, we're able to get out and get some sunlight and do something fun. So it's all about balancing all of these things out, which seems small, but together can really be the difference between working well, being happy, getting along well. Because I think one of the things that's really helped our quartet since it began is that as individuals, we all are great friends and get along with each other very well. But because of all the travel, all the work, all of the pressure sometimes, that can be difficult to maintain this sort of feeling of a four-way marriage, which people often refer to playing in a string quartet as. There's a lot that can get in the way. There's lots of trouble that can happen. But as long as it all always comes back to us as a quartet all having a deep respect for one another, we never really run into any problems that can't be overcome in a very brief conversation.
I think what you've described is sort of the dynamics of a living art. It can change every day and every night, and it'll be very exciting to see what you produce on Thursday. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk.
No, well, thank you again so much for having me.